of order. You're out of order. The whole trial is out of order.
It's time for Legally Served with Attorney Franz Borghardt.
Your Honor, I'd like to ask for a recess.
I'd like an answer to the question, Judge.
I'll allow it.
An open and honest discussion about how the law applies to the headlines.
You not only insult me, but you insult the integrity of this court.
The defendant is not guilty.
The defense is wrong.
But somebody in this courtroom is.
I'm being charged with a crime.
A trial by court martial.
Is that what this is? I'm being charged with a crime?
Legally Served with Attorney Franz Borghardt.
Don't tell me what I know and don't know. I know the law.
Yes, it's time for Legally Served. However, Franz Borghardt out today. In his stead, as always, Richard Sprinkle. Welcome back, sir. How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me, Brian. I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing very well. We got a couple of different topics to talk about today. And then on the way in, I was listening to America in the Morning here, and the Murtaugh trial is going to go back in. So
they filed a motion for a new trial.
Are you up to speed on that one? I didn't want to hit you blindside.
Briefly.
Okay.
So they're claiming jury tampering.
Yeah.
To get
a book done.
Yeah. So, hey, I mean, look, capitalism is pretty big in our society.
I like it.
If you got a chance to write a book, right?
I like money.
Not when you work for the judge, though.
Right.
No, not a good idea.
Well, how does that work, though? Like, what kind of access does an attorney have one-on-one with a jury? Just in general, not specifically about the Murtaugh trial.
Wasn't the attorney. It was one of the judge's clerk. So, I mean, it's probably, presumably an attorney.
Right.
But they actually have a fair amount of access. I mean, it's...
To get one-on-one with a juror?
Sure.
Wow.
I mean, it's not difficult. You could presumably get access to a juror fairly easily, especially if the juror doesn't realize you're not supposed to be talking to them.
Mm-hmm.
Judges around here are typically really good about explaining, look, it's not that we don't like you, but we're not going to talk to you. My staff's not going to talk to you. We'll say hello and good morning, but that's about the extent of our conversations. But if you've got a judge that doesn't go to those links and explain it to the juror, and I don't know what this judge did or didn't, or I have no idea.
Yeah.
You know, somebody just comes up and says, hey, what do you think about what's going on? You're probably going to spill your guts if you're that juror.
Yeah, probably. I'm not blaming the juror, though. I'm blaming the attorney.
Oh, 100%.
Like, anyone should have the knowledge.
Right.
That's a big no.
That's a huge no-no.
Right.
Huge no-no.
I mean,
you've got obstruction of justice. You've got jury tampering. I mean, it just keeps going.
And you've got someone who's already been convicted.
Right.
Two life sentences.
Right.
And probably did it. Like, I think it's safe to say that, right?
The evidence is fairly weighty.
And if you've got a lawyer saying, hey, let's speed this along, I don't know if anything was offered along the side.
Don't know.
If there's any kind of, hey, coming out, I'll cut you in.
Who knows?
I don't know if that's a possibility there. It's a possibility. I don't know how it would actually play out. But, like, is it possible the Murtaugh sentence could be overturned?
What would happen is they would overturn his conviction, give him a new trial.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, you know, as the defense attorney, you have to weigh the options on that. Is that a smart move? What happened to my defendant? If their exposure is really bad on the back end, maybe I don't want a new trial. But here he's got nothing to lose.
Right.
So let's go for it.
Right. Because it's a
that
matter
wheel.
Of, like, he's two life sentences are already there.
Sure.
So even if they were to come back and say, let's knock this in half and call it a day, that's still one life
sentence.
Still
one life sentence.
Right.
Right.
So if you're Alex Murtaugh's representation, you want
Absolutely.
A whole new slate here.
Yeah, you try
for everything. We all get to relive this again, and Netflix gets to put out another documentary.
That's right.
Everybody gets paid except for the person who wrote the book.
True.
Yeah. All right.
True.
A ballpark this, like, crystal ball this. Do you think that's how it'll play out?
Well, you know, getting a new trial is one of the hardest things to do in the system. I mean, it really is.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, like in Louisiana, we've got to have new evidence that was never presented at trial.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that evidence has got to be pretty strong. So for the South Carolina courts to give him a new trial based on jury tampering, it's very possible, because jury tampering is a huge thing. That says his constitutional rights to a fair trial were violated. So the only way to correct that is to throw out the conviction, and if the state wants to try him again, they'll try him again. Now, the state is going to try him again
yeah.
if that comes up. But it's always up to the state if they want to do it.
He's Attorney Richard Sprinkle. I tell you what, we don't have enough time to dive into the two of the other topics that we're going to talk about today. One from up in West Monroe, another from closer to home. We'll dial into both of those after we get back. It's Legally Served every Wednesday. How do the headlines apply from a legal perspective? That's what we're doing right now. Richard Sprinkle's in for Franz Borghardt this morning. Going to shift to a different story as that Murtaugh story will play itself out on a national level for sure. Yeah. Let's bring it back to the state of Louisiana, go to West Monroe specifically. Per the Ouachita Citizen, another football player's hospitalization, has led to West Monroe head coach Todd Garvin being placed on administrative leave, quote, until further notice. West Monroe practiced at 10 a.m. on Labor Day. The player that was hospitalized due to heat had to make up work for missing the previous week with COVID. Offensive coordinator Kevin Davis has been elevated to active head coach, and Garvin's absent. I don't really care about that part, but let's get to the rest of the story here. This marks West Monroe's fourth incident involving a player suffering from heat exhaustion this season. Two players received fluids for dehydration at the hospital this summer. Another was transferred to Shreveport after his symptoms continued during the night.
Mm-hmm.
Following that incident last month, Garvin accepted the blame. At the time, he said, I accept full responsibility for any judgment or any decisions that are made concerning the three that ended up seeking medical attention. I always consider player safety as the most important thing to me. And then a fourth one ends up in the hospital.
Always consider.
I mean, unless you got to make up ground, you got to, you know, run till you've made up all the COVID loss.
Sure.
So,
because you can make up a whole week's worth of mispractice in an hour.
You
right?
Absolutely can.
Absolutely, sure. Of course.
Yeah. So strategy aside, from a legal standpoint, what's this guy looking at? Like, as far as, is he looking at anything criminal here?
Potentially is. There is a law in the books against negligent injuring, right?
Okay.
And basically, negligence can be a criminal problem. If your negligence rises to the point that somebody else is getting hurt,
mm-hmm.
and particularly in a case where it's happened multiple times,
mm-hmm.
There can be criminal charges brought. There certainly can.
So I pushed this story to the top of the stack because we've seen fatalities in Louisiana, in Livingston Parish in recent years.
Right.
Like, we've seen fatalities from this on the football practice field. We see stories about it every August. We talk about it in terms of keeping hydrated, staying out of the sun when you don't have
those two-a-days are
and
murder, man.
Yeah, they really are. Yeah. But, you know, it's two-a-days they're supposed to, and two-a-days are over by the time school starts.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, early morning, early evening.
Right.
You're missing the hot chunk of the day.
Exactly.
Right? And, you know, they're brutal. To be sure, but this is another level, and to see it four times from one team,
right?
You got to start asking the question of when West Monroe puts a coach on administrative leave, I have to start thinking that maybe something else is going to end up the other shoe is going to drop here.
What was their record, by the way?
You know what? I don't know,
because who knows?
Yeah, I mean, it's West Monroe. They're good every year.
Sure.
So. The likelihood that this would play into something.
Oh, the likelihood that it plays into criminal, I don't know. It's going to depend on what the district attorney wants to do. If, you know, they've always got prosecutorial discretion, they can make the decision whether they want to bring charges or not. On the civil side, though.
Yeah.
On the civil side, though, the kid and the kid's parents definitely have the possible, they've got a viable claim here if they want to bring one.
Now, I don't know if I'm going to cross the streams between criminal and civil, but how hard is it to prove? How hard is it to prove that if the coach puts forth a number of guidelines that you're supposed to follow as a player,
mm-hmm.
okay, you're supposed to be drinking your water at, you know, throughout the day. You're supposed to be taking care of yourself off the field. You're not supposed to be eating whatever, X, Y, Z. You know, you're supposed to stay on a pretty strict diet. That's a commitment you make to the team. If you fail as a player to live up to that commitment, and then it affects you on the field, you can't perform at your optimal basis. Like, does the coach have cover if the kid is being a kid?
Well, that's going to be up to the coach to prove, you know, as far as the defense goes. I think the real issue here is the number of times it's occurred.
Right.
If this was the first time a player went down with a heat injury, that would be one thing. Second time, that would be another thing. But we're on the fourth.
Right.
And
one had to be transferred to Shreveport.
That's
because the symptoms got worse after they got to the hospital.
Well, and that's the nature of heat injuries. If it's bad enough, that can easily occur. The fact that this has happened four times, I mean, after the second one, that's clear notice that, hey, it's hot. I'm working the players pretty hard. We have to, you know, implement some definite hydration strategies and other ways to check and make sure these guys are doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe take more breaks. Maybe, you know, just give them a little rest every now and then. And I don't know what was going on there. I wasn't there.
Right.
You weren't there. But four guys have gone down.
And this is the follow-up to that. Is it the number of guys who have gone down, or is it the time span? This didn't happen on one day. It's not like on the first day of practice they were all overwhelmed.
Right, right.
You had two, then you had one, and then you had one more. So you're talking three separate instances where...
That actually makes it worse. I mean, if all four of them had gone out the very first day,
right,
you could probably sit back and say, God, these guys weren't drinking water before practice or something, but this is spread out.
Mm-hmm.
And by the virtue of the fact that it's spread out, that gives the coaching staff and the school administration what we call notice. You're on notice. This is a problem. You're on notice. This needs to be addressed. So, if I were that young lad's parent, I would probably be on the phone with somebody already.
I don't know if this is going to translate question wise. Does our football heavy culture play into the likelihood of whether or not we'll see civil charges here?
Does our football have a culture?
Go. Okay. If you turn around and sue this coach and you're in West Monroe and nothing is more important than West Monroe High School football, don't you kind of become a pariah within your own community?
Oh, I'm sure you might be looked down on negatively by some of the folks in the community. But at the same time, I mean, you got to look at the other side of the coin. You got to look at the kids' best interests. No, it shouldn't be a money grab, but something needs to be done to wake this coach up and wake the staff up and make sure this doesn't continue to happen.
We got attorney Richard Sprinkle in for Franz Borchardt. We do Legally Served at this time every Wednesday. As far as the school is concerned, liability here, I don't see it going farther than the coach. This can't kick all the way up to the school, can it?
Well, there's theories, legal theories like, you know, respondeat superior, where the boss is responsible for what the employee's doing. So it could rise up the chain a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, typically the employers go out of their way to kind of indemnify or defend their employees anyway. So it's possible it could go up the chain. It is.
One more before we move on, and we're going to talk about a completely different story in our next segment. But the penalties on a criminal end, you talked about negligent injuring.
Right.
What are the potential penalties there?
Negligent injuring, the crime for that is a misdemeanor level crime.
Right.
So, you know, up to 6 months in jail, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's up to a $500 fine per count.
Okay.
So if they just found him guilty of one, it's minimal exposure, and a football coach is not going to go to jail for 6 months. I can predict that.
I wouldn't imagine he would. He's attorney Richard Sprinkle. It's Legally Served. We do it every Wednesday. We're going to pivot, hit a different headline in our next segment, and that is a welder for a performance contractor said he found what appeared to be a hangman's noose at his job site last month in Morgan City. His lawyer said he was fired after reporting it to his supervisors. Company, however, says no. He was just really bad at his job. That's why he was fired. We're going to talk about that next. Attorney Richard Sprinkle in for Legally Served. Pivoting topics here, keeping it in the state, however. As a welder for performance contractor said he found what appeared to be a hangman's noose at his job site last month in Morgan City. Lawyer said he was fired after reporting it to his supervisors, but the company representatives are disputing the claim. They say their investigation found otherwise. So a short video of the suspected noose shows the rope wrapped around a pole, which would make it tough to use that rope to pull up any materials, the employee and his lawyer argue. They also said the employee and his welding work history has never seen knots like that used to lift heavy items to the top of an industrial platform. So the welder tells our news partners over at WBRZ his problems actually began days earlier on August 12th when he reported that a coworker had verbally assaulted him and threatened to start a fight. An internal report that was filed with the company indicates the matter was brought to the attention of his superintendent. Then on August 15th, the welder said someone was interfering with one of his hoses, disconnecting it, and on his way back up to the platform, he discovered what appeared to be a hangman's noose. So, by the way, the company has said that he'd been written up a number of times before.
Yeah, he had two previous write-ups.
Right. So
different, different things.
He wasn't let go for this incident for reporting a hangman's noose. He was let go just because he was bad at his job.
Right, right.
All right, so let's sift through this, Richard. First of all, at some point, I believe the company said it was a particular kind of knot.
They claimed it was an arbor knot.
An arbor knot, yes. Which it is not. N-O-T, not K-N-O-T. It is not an arbor knot.
It doesn't appear to be one.
No. Now, to be fair, though, every time there is a loop in a rope,
sure,
it appears every time there's a loop in a rope, somebody's claiming that there's a noose there.
Well, interestingly enough, if you look at the definition of a noose under the statute, because we have a law for this stuff in Louisiana.
I would hope.
As used in this section, quote, noose means a rope tied in a slip knot, which binds closer the more it is drawn, which historically has been used in execution by hanging and which symbolizes racism and intimidation. So if it's just a slip knot that binds as it's pulled, an arbor knot fits the legal definition of a slip
knot. An arbor knot is a noose by definition.
By my interpretation, by definition, under the statute, an arbor knot would fit.
Okay, so that being said, and this does not look like an arbor knot in the picture.
It doesn't.
If there is
a fly fishing knot.
Yeah. And as I look at the picture, I see what could very easily be interpreted as a hangman's noose. It does appear that way in the picture.
Multiple wraps going up.
Right.
The rope.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, is there use for that knot or that rope on that job site? I don't know.
Well, in any time you've got to hoist things up from the ground up to a tower or what have you, a slip knot's pretty, useful.
Effective.
Well,
right.
Sure, sure. You can wrap it around some tools or a bag or whatever and pull it up. So even though a noose is we all know what a noose was designed for, and it's used as a horrible intimidation tactic, that knot itself could be used to pull things up. Sure, of course,
right.
It could. And in welding, as any kind of work in high places, I'm sure there's knots being used all the time to haul things up from lower points. The problem with that argument is the way in the picture, the way this rope is wrapped around another pipe above it and all, it doesn't look like something that's being used to pull anything up at all.
Yeah, it's the other end of the rope is attached to something above a platform that's above it.
Right.
So if you were to use the slip knot to tighten onto something and then raise it up to that platform,
you could. Sure.
I could definitely see that as a possibility.
Right.
I don't know enough about the job site to know. And what I do know is that the folks from Performance Contractors put out a statement that says the specific knot in question was an arbor knot, which you and I, looking at it, don't think it was, which is a variation of the slip knot. The three most commonly used knots in our industry are the slip knot, clove hitch, and arbor knot. These knots are essential for securing lightweight materials when manually raising or lowering from elevated work areas.
Right.
So that platform that's above it would be the elevated work area. You slip it on, you pull it up, and
pull
you're good
up.
To go.
Sure.
You're not using it as a pulley or anything like that.
No.
You're using manual power. So they kind of cover that in the statement.
Right.
So.
But I'm just getting Bubba Wallace flashbacks, to be honest.
Yeah. Which,
I mean, okay, we all know what it looks like. And frankly, the knot in the Bubba Wallace thing looked the same way. But was that its purpose? Was that the intended purpose behind it? I don't know.
The hard part about this is the implications of what looks like a noose.
Right.
Supersede the use.
Sure.
Of the rope.
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
It's like saying we need to remove rope from job sites to avoid the implications altogether.
Can't do that.
Well.
You simply can't do that.
Then we have to live with the implications and the possibility that somebody who's been called out on their job a number of times in the past can just play this card along the way.
Right. And the issue with this case is you can see both sides' arguments pretty easily. I mean, you really can.
Yeah.
It's impossible to make a judgment call on this one without digging into it, doing more of an investigation, and ultimately finding the person who tied the knot and talking to them and seeing what's going on with them.
The statement by Performance Contractors goes on to say, as for the allegation of retaliatory discharge, it should be noted that the employee in question had been employed by Performance as a welder for less than a month prior to his reporting of the rope. During that time and prior to his complaint, he received two disciplinary warnings.
Right.
He reported the rope on August 15th. On August 18th, Performance tested his first structural weld since being employed, and approximately 17 out of 42 inches failed objective ultrasonic testing. So, like, he'd been in under a month,
yep,
disciplined twice, runs into this problem, and then his work is faulty as well.
If that performance evaluation where they did the structural tests of his weld, if those results are true, he's not a great welder.
Well, and based off of what's in front of us right now, right. I understand what you're saying. You could see both sides of the argument.
Sure.
But this sounds like I'm going to be out of a job. I know I suck at this. Let me find another way that I can, like, make hay on the back end.
And there is a possibility you're right. Possibility is there. It could also have, a very racist coworker that.
So that's possible as well. Yeah, and Performance Contractors will take care of that on the investigative level.
Sure.
But now their name's going to get dinged in the media along the way.
That's the big problem. A company, we were talking about this earlier with the coach in the school. See,
yeah.
Now we've got a company who's potentially on the hook for something they didn't even know was going on.
Right.
Couldn't have known was going
right.
on.
Right. A spat between two coworkers.
And in this case, you would be talking about something that would. Racial intimidation would be outside the course and scope of work.
He is Attorney Richard Sprinkle. That's what we're going to have to call it.